This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 559 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuddersincpodcast.com, and joining me once again via Skype from Melbourne from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, it is Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Hi, Bruce, and welcome to episode 559 of Shudders Inc. What's it called? Shudders Inc. Is it Shudders Inc. Photography Podcast?
Shudders Inc.
Podcast. Shudders Inc. Welcome to... I think I should know. Welcome to episode 559 of Shudders Inc. Podcast.
You've only been here for 300 episodes.
Do you just say podcast?
I think I just say to Shudders Inc. But the website is shuddersincpodcast.com.
There you go.
So, yeah. How have you been?
You know, not bad. Actually, speaking of pods, one of my footy podcasts, the only podcast I listen to are football ones, nothing to do with this photography crap.
Of course.
It was North Pod Show, they're called, because, you know, all the other good names. So North Melbourne, North Pod Show. And he wants to do a Player of the Year award. And he was asking the listeners to come up with an idea.
Right.
And so I came up with North Pod-ium, as in like podium.
Yep.
Yes, nice. The first, second, and third. If you're doing it like a tier of who's winning first, second, and third best players, it's a podium.
Yep.
And I think I charged him $100 for that. I thought, you know, intellectual property. Oh, wait, I'll see that show up in the mail.
Yeah,
but no, exactly. I've been pretty good. I ran a workshop since we last talked.
Nice.
Another natural light portrait workshop down at the lovely Ocean Grove Camera and Photo, I think they're called.
I've been seeing your images pop up on Facebook and Insta.
Yeah, I've been slashing around some old drives full of crap I've never really looked at as well. So a little bit of that going on too. But yeah, I went down and did that. It was a good day.
And how many people turned up?
Eight's the maximum I'll have. I won't ever have any more than eight people at a workshop. It's just it's too hard to control.
Yeah,
you know, you want everyone to have their time in the sun.
Everyone get their chance to shoot.
Exactly, and then the more people you have, the exponentially more chance there are one of those people are going to be in the workshop.
Right,
you know those people, the ones who repose the model, who don't listen to anything you say, who jump back in front of everyone else and piss everyone else off, shoot from every angle, and then post the worst shot and say, I learned this at Glyn's workshop.
Yeah.
Which I always go online and say, no, you didn't. My eldest, funnily enough, has a TikTok channel.
Right.
But I know he's got 15,000 followers or something like that.
Yeah, right.
But apparently he was on the wrong side of TikTok. One of his videos went on to the wrong side of TikTok this week.
What is that?
Well, where all the haters are, apparently. Oh. And he was getting 500 comments a minute.
Yikes.
On one of his videos. Almost all haters.
Wow.
But people would post like a comment. Oh, I really love this. But, and then the next comment would be but, and then all the homophobic, all racial, all sorts of slurs. So he, to his great joy and delight, he'd go on and he'd keep the one, oh, I really like this, and then delete and so all the hate comments become it's a great joy. So it's I think such a cool approach to dealing with haters online is to try and edit stuff so it looks like it's all positive stuff. It's a very brilliant approach.
I have a thing where on my YouTube channel, I make it my mission to interact with every comment that comes in.
Really?
Yep. And I very, very rarely get negative ones, but I'll just go, thanks for your opinion.
And your mother.
And leave it at that, you know. And,
just write your mother.
And sometimes, you know, you see them come back with snarky comments, and I'm like, no, I've done my bit. I've interacted once. That's it. You know, and I just ignore them. And, And I don't.
I'm not sure I'd have the intestinal fortitude to not go back at them. You know, don't mind a bit of a verbal stash.
Oh, believe me, it is tempting sometimes, particularly when you know that they're wrong, and you know, and you could shoot them down in flames. I just think, no, it's just not worth getting into that.
Yeah, a standard reply is like, "You're welcome to your opinion, or you could be right."
Yeah,
like me.
Nice. I figure I don't want to give some random on the internet any ammunition to ever come after me, you know.
But helps it. What's that thing about no publicity is bad publicity? And, so you look at it that way. Yeah. And the more interaction you have on a post, the further it's going to go up. So even if it's all haters, it's still going to go up the algorithm a bit more, isn't
That's
it?
That's true.
Oh, dear. Except, of course, when the algorithm scans posts and it doesn't allow. Like, I got banned from, the only time I've ever been banned from Facebook was when somebody had a post up, describe what you do for a living in an inappropriate way.
Right.
And all I put was, I shoot people.
Banned
from Facebook.
The Zuckerbots wouldn't have taken well to that at all.
It's like, context, people, context.
Yeah.
too funny. But yeah, so I've done it. Has it been 3 weeks since we last did
it? It has.
It's kind of hard to believe, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Time. And my wife was just saying she's got to go to.
Isn't she going to Bali or something?
She's going to Bali, but she's got to go to something else. Something's on one weekend. Then she's got to go to Bali. She goes, then it's Easter.
Yep.
I said, well, that's a quarter of the year gone.
That's right.
Already, which is just astounding, you know. And this being my 60th year, I don't want to disappear too quickly. I want to, sneak up on that 60, not just rush up and scare it.
Yeah.
You know, you might, 60, ah, dead, you know. Wasn't expecting that. Dear.
Yeah.
So, so that's about all I've done. I don't think I've done that much other photo. Oh, I took some iPhone photos today, actually. I was inspired at the time, but I think if I was to look back at them, I'd probably go, what did I take that for? Have a look here. That's a piece of mortar between two bricks. Yeah, that's
right.
That's a slightly odd shape and light fixture on a brick wall.
Okay.
And that's an air vent. And that's a piece of artwork that's falling apart. I shouldn't have taken any of those.
Glenn's in his industrial photography phase.
There you go. Look at that. That stuff that been people photographing graffiti lined lanes and stuff.
Yeah, right.
I was walking from where I parked my car to. I was going to a coffee with a guy, and I was a few minutes early. I'll take some photos.
Nice.
I had my camera with me.
Yeah.
Didn't use it. Pulled out the phone.
Right.
Shows the way the world's gone, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just crazy.
We went down to the Ramses exhibition in Sydney over the weekend. I'd booked tickets for
the Egyptian one.
Yeah.
I was trying to think, what's the photographer called Ramses?
No, this ancient Egypt exhibition.
He didn't take many photos at all.
And I'd booked... No, they didn't. and I'd booked the tickets a couple of months ago. And I thought about taking my A7 III, and I, like you, just went, screw it. I'll just take my, I've got my got the camera in my phone. That'll do.
That'll do.
Just shot some.
What were the photos like?
They came out fantastic. You know, for JPEGs, it's exactly what you expect.
And again, what are you doing with them?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Absolutely
nothing. I was just thinking about this the other day. Some guy was posting his scanned negatives from his 6-4-5 camera being out shooting.
Right.
And I'm looking at the photos and going, it may just be because it's on a computer screen and it's on Facebook, but that is an iPhone shot at absolute best.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no art to that.
All the gear and no idea.
But it's like they think there's magic in the tool and the medium.
Yeah.
Not magic in they still have to produce something of interest.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We have, like me today with those stupid iPhone shots, we have enough photographs of bricks between mortar and grills.
Or mortar
and a bit
between
of flake
bricks, even.
Either way. That might be more interesting. The world doesn't need any more photos of graffiti-lined alleyways or a tree in a field, realistically,
But then if you take that attitude, you could say, well, there's no sense in anyone ever pressing the shutter button ever again because everything that can be photographed has been photographed. What has not been photographed?
Press conference?
Arguable.
No, because what's being said and done at that moment, a riot...
Mm.
A war zone, political speech, moments in time. People are the things, because you go to India, 1.4 billion people. They haven't all been photographed.
Not by
you. There's people there, well, not by yet. But now I met a woman in Vietnam who was 90 years old and never had a photo taken in her life.
Wow.
Yeah, so 90, So, that's one of the joys that I think I like about people is every face is different. Yeah. Every face is a new... Yeah. What I do with them is just kind of the same old boring crap. But that, and that connection with another human and finding out a bit about them and then photograph, which is why I preferred that over street photography, is actually meeting people and then photographing them.
Yeah.
Because that human connection and then be able to photograph your impression of what you saw will always be unique.
Yep.
Even if the photo is shaped and styled and framed the same way all the other ones are, the subject will always be different.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe that, but that's my justification anyway. if nothing else. But and that's why I always say, if you can't get joy in going out and the doing,
yeah.
So if you want to go out and photograph a tree in a field,
yeah.
If that gives you joy to do that, that's right.
Yeah.
If you're doing it for the sole purpose of getting a killer photo for the internet, it's pointless.
Yeah.
Because it's all been done. It's been done a million times better than any of us could do it.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
But I went fishing a couple of days ago, fly fishing.
Yep.
And I haven't been there but
catch any flies?
Yeah. Bloody March flies biting me. but I got out.
So successful then.
there's the gentle sound of rushing water.
Yeah.
A little bit of wind rustling through the leaves, and then a magpie warbling just as the sun was rising. And I thought, you know, it doesn't matter if I don't catch a fish.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter anything else. This is just the joy of being out here and having that. Yeah, and that should be the same way for the photos. If you're out there waiting sunrise for a landscape and you're going, looking around, going, yeah, this is it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what happens with the sunset, sunrise, or even anything. If that moment isn't enough, the photo never will be.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's such a, I think we, and you see that so much with Instagram, where people rush around to this spot here and this spot, the Instagram spots, and try and recapture exactly what's been done, or the same thing, but trying to do it better.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like a joyous thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's like every photograph I've ever taken of the Taj Mahal reflected in the reflecting pools.
Yes.
Yeah, with perfect symmetry and all, you know, it's soulless.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful and it's a nice shot, but you know, there's people have got far better shots and with far better cloud conditions or far better light conditions or far better whatever. And yeah, but if I don't get the joy of whilst I'm taking that shot, looking up and seeing this majestic thing in front of me, what's the point?
Yeah, but I mean, I have images in my collection that are things that have been photographed a gazillion times and a gazillion times better by other photographers.
Yeah.
But I love looking at my image and knowing that I was there and that image reminds me of me being there.
Yeah, so there's the thing though, wasn't it? So the image brings back the sounds, the smells, the everything that you experienced at that moment. I was talking to this guy I was having coffee with today, exactly that. The great thing about photography is that I can look at any of my photographs that I've bothered to do anything with, and I can there's one on the background of my screen here, for example, on my computer, and it's a simple shot of a family sitting around a fire next to a makeshift hut on the banks of a river in Yangon in Burma. Myanmar.
Yep.
And it's just this, but I can remember every smell, every sound. Yep. I can remember the mosquitoes buzzing around. I can remember everything that was happening in that moment because of that photo.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be able to remember it, well, vaguely be able to remember stuff otherwise.
Exactly. So,
yeah, you've got that photo and it isn't as good as all the other people did it, but the experience of you, and I bet if you didn't enjoy the experience of taking that photo, you wouldn't enjoy looking at the photo.
Yeah. Absolutely.
As much. Because what are you thinking? What are you remembering when you look at it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't enjoy that. Oh, the weather was... Oh, it was so hot. There were flies. Oh, yeah. The place stank.
You know what? I can look at my nighttime shot of the Eiffel Tower... And every time I look at it, I remember that, you know, 30 seconds later, my camera bag was gone. But I still love looking at that image.
It's the last one. It's the final.
Because it reminds me of that trip. It reminds me of being in Paris. It reminds me, just all of it, you know. And for me, my travel photos are really they're like a portal back in time for me.
And they're like a journal. They're like a journal, aren't they? You're journaling a moment in time that brings out those memories and as best as your brain can recall the stuff that was happening at the time.
And the thing I find interesting, I had this happen only a month or so back. I was going back through my Europe photos from 2017. Okay, so it's now 7 years ago.
Wow.
And when I've looked at my Europe photos over the last 7 years, or over the last 6.5 odd years, it's always been, you know, the 200 or 300 that I collated down from the entire shoot, the ones that I considered the keepers. And for some reason, I was going through the entire unfiltered collection. And it was amazing. I saw images and I went, geez, I don't even remember taking that one.
it's interesting, isn't it? You know?
And I think that comes back to what you were saying about if you didn't enjoy the experience of taking it.
There was nothing momentous about that, or it doesn't have to be momentous. There was nothing that was satisfying enough at the time. You didn't enjoy the end result photo wasn't something that was, oh, I really love that, or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like we all take photos that you go, why the hell did I take that? You know?
Like
me with bricks and mortar today. You know?
Yeah.
But it's like I go through all my tour photos and going, why did you even have your camera in your hand for that? Yeah. Why? What? Yeah, Glenn, you kind of know what you're doing, but not there you didn't.
Yeah.
That's stupid. But I'm the same. That's why I've been looking at a lot of my photos that I've never looked at before.
Yeah.
And finding some gems, and that's the thing. You go back with a different eye and find those gems. And I reckon, and I've never really thought of it this way until just this moment, this is kind of a cool conversation. When shooting weddings, okay, what you do is you know during the day that you kill a shots anyway,
yes.
Okay, realistically. But when you're going in Lightroom, when you're rating, star rating your photos, you're going through and you're doing, oh, it's a 5, a 4, a 3, a 2, or one, whatever you go down to, whatever your lowest number you choose to go down to. You go through there, and then when you want to build the story of the day, you get your 5s, then you try and fill the 4s around it to help fill the story. Then you go, oh, shit, there's still some gaps here. What are my 3s like? Well, I've still got a whole. Are there any 2s that I can kind of at least tell a bit of a story in that point? And that's where your lesser quality work slips in.
But super creative with the post processing.
Yeah, exactly. I've turned them all black and white. But I've never thought to do my holiday, my travel photos that way. To build a storyline of the tour rather than just individual shots.
Right.
But I'm sure that I would see and maybe find more, not so much usable photos, but narrative photographs.
Right.
If I was to scroll down to my 2s, 3s, and 2s to find story gaps, then I would, if I'm just going through, they're my 5s, I'll worry about the 4s and 3s in a couple of years' time or whatever. You know? I'll only look at half a dozen shots from a day and forget the rest.
Yeah.
But if your purpose is to build a narrative, I'm sure I would find a lot more use for my photographs, especially the ones that I'm going, I'm not sure why I shot that.
Yeah.
But if that helps fill the storyline, it makes a lot of sense. That's interesting. I'm not going to do it, but I'm sure there's lots of people do that with their travel stuff. It's just not the way my brain works.
Yeah.
It's what I would do for a wedding.
Well, the thing is, your travel tends to be work-related, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
And so I think there's a bit of a difference in what you have to shoot when you travel compared to what I have to shoot when I travel.
Of course.
And
I have to provide shooting experiences for others.
Exactly.
Not necessarily
what you would like to shoot.
Go for a bit more of the low hanging fruit.
Yep.
Rather than the more aspirational type image. Because if you need to get 8 people to get the shot and you've got only X amount of time, you can't make it too complicated or take too big a risk. Yeah, or wait too long a time for something to happen to capture a shot. Whereas when traveling by myself, I've spent 5 hours in one spot before just because the light was good.
Yeah.
And waited for stuff to happen. And you couldn't do that.
Yeah,
unless you had the complete control. It's fascinating, isn't it? But you're the same. Even when you travel with your wife.
Yeah.
So there's limitations and constraints to all of that as well.
Totally.
You have X amount of time you can do the you stuff.
Yep.
But that has a very finite
window of opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Fascinating. Yeah, fascinating. This whole concept of why we shoot and how we value photos and how I think it's quite fascinating.
Yeah.
this could... Is this our third podcast for the year?
Something like that.
With moderately useful... Well, not necessarily useful, but... I don't know if other people find this interesting, but I found that interesting.
Yeah, just totally.
Even to analyse your own thought processes. Yeah. Not even about how does other people do stuff. Why am I doing it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's an important aspect of shooting.
And
you know?
I wanted to pick up on the comment you made a few minutes ago about, you know, you look back at some of these images and you think to yourself, why did you even have your camera in your hand for that, you know? And it's like, well, because if you didn't have your camera in your hand, you weren't prepared for the spontaneous.
But I also have my cameras out. But I agree, absolutely. But just as you were saying that, because I started to analyse...
Good
Why
thing I got
I
that recorded,
that
people. He said he agreed with me.
I said, you're right. You're often right, Bruce. Yeah, you're right about how good I am. My daughter, my youngest today, actually, I said she was right about something, so she got a voice recorder on the phone and said, can you say that again, please? Can you say that you were wrong and I was right? She goes, because next time you say that you're never wrong, I want to play it back. But just as you were saying that, and I started to analyse in my head those photos again.
Yeah.
Do those photos that I'm thinking, why did I even bother, more likely represent a failure for me to capture whatever it was that sparked my interest to want to pick up the camera, to capture in a way that actually meant something or said something or, yeah. I get
so
if
as
the shutter speed
you just
was
missed
wrong.
The timing, you mean?
Or I just didn't capture the essence of what I thought was interesting in that moment. Yeah, that there's a failure on my part to do something interesting with something that my innate instincts saying, shoot this, Glenn, because I trust my instincts. Here's the weird thing about shooting. I often don't know the shoot I'm doing is good until I'm finished.
Right.
So I'm not even thinking that, oh, look, at the light on this is great, or this guy's going to be fabulous, or this is going to be amazing. I don't even think it.
Right.
And it's only often afterwards I look and go, oh, shit, I should have shot that more. I should have done more with that because all of that was really good.
Yep.
And I didn't shoot it enough. I didn't look for other possibilities in that amazing moment. I did four shots when I should have done 40 shots in that. Yeah. And the so-called failures, the ones that are, well, why did I bother? Did I just, my instincts are telling me to do something and I'm failing to capture it in a way that is meaningful.
Okay, I'm just going to pull you up here for a sec.
Do.
So you've just said you've looked back and you've taken four images and you realise this was a great location, setup. Great light, whatever it was. I should have taken 40 shots.
Yeah.
But you've said to me on multiple occasions, you know, and this really came up in the conversation
here you go,
about
Bruce.
Carly.
Don't do what I do. Do what I say. It's pretty simple.
But in the episode where I, you know, the Carly episode where I'd taken the photo of the journo, you know, you made the whole point about, you know, analysing all of these things that work and don't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the 5 minutes of setup and you know 5 seconds of shooting thing. So. Yeah. You know, how
What's
do you
different?
Correlate those two?
The difference is on tour, I have 1 minute to set up and 10 minutes of getting the other people shooting. So I don't have 5 minutes to set up a shot. I've got...
The numbers are irrelevant, but yeah.
No, I have no time to set up a shot.
Right, okay.
Because they've got time pressure of A, the person... I haven't got necessarily a willing subject like your model or your person you're shooting. So I've got a random person in the streets here, finite time.
Yep.
And I consciously know I've got to try and get 8 people to shoot this person in this finite time.
Yeah.
So I will set up in 20 seconds, shoot for 15 seconds.
Yeah.
And then not shoot again until everyone, and I won't shoot again. That I'll finish, make sure everyone's getting the stuff, dealing with problems, thank the person, be on our way.
Yeah.
So I don't have that opportunity to say, how can I maximize it? How can I even to look at the photos and go, oh, this is really cool. What else is here?
Yep.
And I guess the difference is when you're doing that headshot of your news lady, you need a specific type of shot as far as a frontal, it's a headshot. Yeah, you're not going to do many profile shots or over the shoulder shots or angled from down low. Some of the more creative angles you could maybe use if you're photographing a character model or something.
Right.
So you do that front on shots, but then it's like, you know, walk the arc. What's it like from here? What's it like from over here? What's it like from higher? What's it like from lower? Yep. You know, and on tour, I just don't get the time to do that sort of stuff. And I should. This is a failure on my own part, because the eight people are with me should be able to put up with me for 3 minutes shooting. Not all of them can. Sometimes you get customers who, you know, that say, why are you ever taking any photos? Well, I've got to be able to see it. But it's maybe I'm letting them down as well by not spending that 2 or 3 minutes to say, well, how many opportunities are here and how many can they shoot? Can I have three people over here shooting, three people over here shooting, and both producing something really, and then swapping, you know, or whatever.
Have you ever considered,
probably not,
on a tour to actually book a model to do a shoot?
Well, we do that with like the Babas in Varanasi. We'll get with the old, and we'll take, and then it's, but then it, here's the thing,
but
though.
But they're getting the same crap from a gazillion other tourists on the same day. I'm talking about you specifically reaching out to someone and organising a model type shoot, like you would do with your natural light portrait workshop that you ran this week.
Yeah.
But doing something like that whilst on tour.
What we do is we'll get a Baba, and maybe we'll get in a boat and go across the other side of the river and have half an hour to shoot.
Oh, okay, fair enough. So we'll do stuff. Yeah, so that is different. Okay.
But what tends to happen then it becomes a teaching shoot as opposed to an end goal photo shoot, if you know what I mean. Like, rather than trying to capture one master, so it might become an off-camera flash shoot. Where I'm teaching a little bit about balancing ambient light and flash and trying to do a little bit of education. And obviously pulling out some good shots. But again, at a workshop, every shot I shoot at a workshop is the starting image of a shoot I would do if I was shooting it myself.
Sure.
So I set up, I get the initial image, say, this is what we're doing, get them to shoot, and then we go on to the next setup.
Yep.
So it's all set up, not actually shoot.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And so those images tend to be a little bit the same on tour when you've got someone for half an hour or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, we might do three or four different setups in that half an hour. But again, they often tend to be, we get to X point, and usually pretty darn good, but not that half an hour of how can I max it? What's the absolute best? Yeah. Well, how do I take this, the extra 5%?
Yeah.
From a really good image to a classic great image, you know? And again, especially if you do it off camera flash, you're dealing with tech issues where people, the cameras don't trigger the flashes. You've got five or six different brands of cameras. So you've got five or six triggers and inevitable issues. So it becomes a different kind of thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes we might just pull someone aside for just 10 minutes and shoot. And that might be just a natural light shot. Or if it's evening, it might be an LED panel shot and stuff like that. But then somewhere like in Myanmar, where you might get some novice monks to travel with you for half a day, then you've got lots of time. And you'll see some of the shots from Myanmar in the temples and stuff where they're a lot more crafted shot because you have a lot more time.
Yeah.
So there's probably a mix of all of those things, you know.
Yeah, right.
And as I say, I've never been on a tour, I've never been on a photo tour that someone's run, and I've never been to a photo workshop that someone's run. So I don't know how other people do stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, I need to know how I do stuff. I don't know what other people expect. I don't know what attendees expect. Well, there's that too, because you don't feel bad because of how crap you are compared to them. But also, you don't understand, if people have been to 20 different workshops and then they come to yours, you have no idea of what their expectation of what a workshop is or what the end result should be. And so you're always wondering, well, am I doing what they want or are they all leaving disappointed? And it's, it's a funny old game, And you ask people to speak up, but they never do.
Right.
Are you getting what you want out of the day? Yep. That doesn't sound like you are, But yeah, definitely on tour, usually, depending on the location, a couple of times, once, at least, hopefully once a day, we'll find time to set up someone and craft a beautiful shot. Because great stuff doesn't happen naturally. Or often, well, it does, but not often.
Yeah, right.
That you're in a spot where the light is fantastic, an amazing person walks into it. This happened on Varanasi one night. We're on an evening where the sun's just set. It's the blue hour. The lights from on the ghats on the buildings by the side of the river are all lighting up reasonably well, and, oh, no, maybe 50, 100 feet away, this old Baba, the holy man in his orange outfit, his big white beard, sort of walks out on this platform and stands under this spotlight from the and looks up to it. And there's me with my 200mm lens on, shooting, already got the exposure up, shooting away, and there's this amazing shot of this great guy just standing there majestically staring. But that, how often does someone walk into great light and pose for it without even know they're being photographed? It doesn't happen, you know?
No.
So, yeah, you've got to be, that, as you said before, you've got to be ready for that sort of stuff. That's the critical thing about why it's great to have two cameras, something with wide, something with big. And hopefully you know your gear well enough that you can get exposure right fast enough.
Yeah.
But it very rarely does stuff naturally happen that's good.
Yeah.
So you do have to craft a little bit of it yourself. You know?
Sure.
Yeah. And then build around that tons of images of, you know, of interesting storekeepers and shops and people and colour and life and all that sort of stuff, you know. Yeah, street photography and smiling at people as you take their photo, engaging but in their environment rather than moving to somewhere where you can control the light more, all that kind of stuff. So you've got to fill out all the other life that you see, because that's the real life as well anyway.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, totally.
And then try and craft a couple of good images a day.
Since 2005, Shutters Inc. has been a labour of love. But beyond the time required to produce it, there is also a financial commitment. If you find value in the podcast and would like to help keep the servers running, hit up the Patreon link, which is in the show notes. Even a couple of dollars a month will help. Much appreciated. Now, back to the podcast.
So what else have we got? We should talk about some other stuff, shouldn't we, I guess?
Oh, I suppose.
Bugger all. I've got one thing that I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Once-in-a-lifetime photograph. And I reckon it genuinely is. So we talked before about everything's been shot. This hasn't. I've never seen this before. Some guy was taking a photo of the Andromeda Galaxy.
Right.
As a meteor streaked past it.
Oh, what?
So you've got this glowing green meteor shooting across this very tightly cropped frame.
Oh, wow.
I mean, what's the chances? What is the chance? So that I've never seen a photo like that before.
That is brilliant.
I mean, yeah, you could go out and shoot every night for the rest of your life and it'll never happen again.
Exactly. Wow.
But I thought that was pretty darn cool.
That is very cool.
And then I came across this thing, this new app called Lapse, LAPSE.
Yeah.
And they're doing like a crowdfunding thing to get this app up and running.
Hmm.
And basically what it is, it turns your phone into an old school camera where you take a photo and it takes time for it to develop, so you can't just go shoot. And I remember my old Hipstamatic app used to do this a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you actually had like a roll of film. You had to shoot all 24 films before you could get it developed, so you wouldn't see the shots you've taken. But it's not so much about the app. What amazes me is this crowdsourcing has raised $30 million to develop this app.
Jeez.
$30 million, Bruce.
Yikes.
$30 million. Well, that's US. So that's like 400 million Australian.
Let's hope, unlike my mob, they can actually ship it on time.
That's
crazy.
What are you spending $30 million on an app for? I mean, what could they possibly be built? I'd want a free phone with the app pre-installed. Yes. I want the iPhone 19.
Yeah.
You know, four generations from now. Now. I want it out for $30 million. So that kind of blew me away.
That is crazy.
And I watched, came up on my YouTube the other day, and I just found a thing on Peter Pixel.
Oh, yes. How good is this?
Can the world's fastest camera drone match Max Verstappen in the Formula 1? This drone does 350 kilometres an hour.
I know. And what was so disappointing about this video was the fact that it was absolutely bucketing rain when they were trying to shoot it. And I was like, because you could see the car actually slipping on the road, you know.
It was very cool. That was pretty cool, though, watching the fish tail. I mean, I've never seen footage of racing like that before. It was pretty darn cool.
It was amazing.
But even just watching how they built it, the trial, I think it was a really cool video. I thought the video, if you have any interest in drones and photography or sports or even just seeing something different for once, I thought it was a really cool little video.
Yeah.
And I would highly recommend you ever spend a few minutes and have a get. It's like 15 minutes.
So basically, for those who have not seen this, they basically flew a drone behind Max Verstappen Verstappen's Formula One car for an entire lap of, was it Silverstone?
Silverstone, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And kept up with the Formula One car.
Yeah. Overtook it at some point. Yeah. That to hold back, you know?
Yeah. The one area where the drone pilot was struggling, you could see it a couple of times, was the tight turns.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He'd overshoot and he'd have to... Well, could you imagine that if you're doing 300 kilometres an hour and trying to avoid the bridges?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to go up, you know, knowing when... Yeah, at that speed, you don't have a lot of time to react. Yeah,
no, yeah. Absolutely.
So I thought that was pretty fascinating. I thought it was a really cool video. Not necessarily overly photographically related, but it was just cool.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Paul Sutton sent a bunch of stuff through. I've not had a chance to look at any of this. Another wedding photographer really does their thing and not show up. Oh, okay. Let me load this up and have a look.
Allegedly did the job, showed some photos, and then ignored the bride
forever.
Turned
up late on the day, left the job early, and sometimes ignoring them forever. Wow.
What, and they've got a problem with that?
Apparently.
I've never delivered photos of the big days. There's multiple brides, though, apparently.
Yeah.
So,
in this day and age, would you, as a couple about to be married, ever book a photographer without going online to get some reviews of that photographer?
Well, maybe there was that. Maybe you do, and maybe there's nothing on there yet, or you're not looking in the right places, or who knows what, you know?
Yeah, the equivalent of Yelp for restaurants, you know, you'd be looking for reviews about this photographer. Are they competent, and do they deliver on time, and yada, yada, yada. And...
Well, this one changed their number multiple times. Such a good picture. Shut up late, left early. Oh, God.
There's got to be a story behind that.
I would just say, you know, sometimes you get what you pay for. I don't know the story behind this. If you go a budget photographer, you sometimes get what you pay for.
Yep.
You know, not trying to assume that's the case for this person. We don't want to be sued. Except with our wide reach of our podcast, Bruce, you just never know. But, you know, of all the things you spend money on the wedding, if you think you're going to stick with this person for a while, the marriage, that is, you think it's going to work out okay for at least 10 years, skimp on a lot of stuff and spend more money on the wedding photographer or the videographer or whatever it is you do. You know, get the people who've got a great reputation, who've been around for a while, who's twice as expensive as the budget guy you were talking about, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
You're probably going to be better off.
Well, we've had this conversation before. You know, 10 years down the track, the cake is gone, the venue's gone, the dress is gone, the tux is gone.
No, that's not true. I found my wedding cake out the other week. It's 25 years later. It's gone off a bit, Bruce. It's gone off just a little bit. Yeah. That's probably chocolate cake. It does that, you know. Chocolate mousse cake.
Yeah.
25 years down the track. Didn't survive, so I thought we'd have it for our 25th wedding anniversary. Turns out not.
No.
It was fruitcake, but it didn't survive the journey.
The photos and the video, they're the things that are going to last.
So, yeah.
Anyway.
I think the only other one, because we've got to wrap this up reasonably, so I want to talk about it, and it's because she's actually asked, you'd like to hear my opinion on this one. And, you know, I can't think of the last time anyone's wanted to hear that, Bruce. So I thought, but it says how much editing is too much for your landscape photos. I thought this is a pretty interesting topic of itself as well.
Yeah.
What do you do more landscape than me, so I know you want to know my opinion, but you say what you think, then I'll say how wrong you are.
Okay. Over the 6 years that I've been doing my YouTube channel on Darktable.
Oh, yeah.
One thing I've noticed is how much I've learned about colour science and how that has really changed the way I now process my RAW files compared to the way I was processing them when I started my YouTube channel.
Sorry about this, Paul. This is not the tangent I was expecting to go on. But, yeah.
And so today, you know, in 2024, my attitude towards post-processing my images is to not crank saturation up to 10 at every opportunity. You know, it's more
about... We go to 11.
I'm going for realism over hype.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
It does.
So, you know, that's...
So who are you trying to please with that?
Oh, always myself.
Okay, so I think the first and foremost has to be how much editing is too much for landscape, as much as pleases you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now,
you can't go the Trey Ratcliffe route and just be ignorance, not ignorance,
pixel but vomit.
Just there's a guy down here in Melbourne who I see his photos and he's exhibited recently and stuff like this, and I look at his photos and they're diabolically bad.
Right.
I mean, the editing is diabolically bad, and like trees have this massive halos around them where he's trying to darken down the sky, and people are going, oh, I really like your photo, but what's with that halo? I don't know what's causing that. but he's doing photo exhibitions and selling photos, you know? Well, kudos to the guy if he's actually selling photos, and he's happy. That's great.
Yeah.
But if we are in that mode of trying to make ourselves better, that I don't know why that's happening. Well, there's a learning path there to find a way to improve what he's doing.
I believe that person does not know why that's happening. I believe they don't want to admit that they were sloppy with their processing.
Well, all his photos are like that. I just don't think he knows much about photo processing.
Right.
You know, I felt like sending him a link to your Darktable channel, but you know, I'm not sure if he's wakeful enough for that. He might doze off. Yeah, but don't operate heavy. I think he drives a truck, so he shouldn't drive heavy machinery after listening to one of your videos. That's cruel, because I've never watched one of your videos.
I know you haven't.
Okay, how much editing? Editing where stuff's starting to go wrong. And you don't know why. You know, maybe if you know you don't know much, but you want to be better, then educate and watch.
Yeah.
There's enough resources out there, like your own Fine channel and Darktable and a million YouTube videos.
Yep.
But I also think, okay, if you do know a fair bit about editing, like yourself, I mean, you're far more knowledgeable about editing than I'll ever be.
Right.
I think there's end use.
Absolutely.
Decisions to be made. What am I doing with this image? Where is it going? If it's going to be printed, what kind of medium is it going to be printed on?
Yeah.
Because the type of medium will have you know, if you're printing on metal, then you're going to want some of that more highly saturated, sort of a little bit more over the top, because the medium will really, really, really bring that out.
Yeah.
Whereas printing on a flat canvas is going to have a very different effect. So you might want to be very different. So how much editing is too much? A, your own joy and your own... that's why you go to an art gallery and some people are standing in front of that picture and some people are standing over in front of that picture, but they won't cross over or spend any real time looking at the other ones.
Yep.
You like what you like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had the coffee today with this guy in this band who's in a fairly famous YouTube band.
Yep.
And, yeah, record companies all over them, all sorts of stuff. And he says, yeah, we went from nothing to massive, sort of overnight.
Right.
I said, yeah, because you've found your niche of people.
Yeah.
You don't have to appeal to everybody.
No.
You just have to find that little tiny wedge of people who like what you like.
Yeah.
And if you have a medium and a way to reach those people, you'll be successful. Because there's a lot out of 8 billion people.
Yep.
Yeah. If you have 0.001% of people who like your stuff.
Yep. That's enough.
That's a huge amount of people.
Yeah.
You know? So it doesn't matter how much you want to edit your photos. If you're targeting your images to like-minded people, you will get satisfaction and joy and mutual appreciation and all. But if you're targeting people who only like natural or only like over the top, you're not going to get that joy and satisfaction, that acceptance and plaudits that maybe you're looking for.
Yeah.
So it's a really tricky question, you know. And I sometimes see that when people put up like two photos on the internet, you know, of the same photo, color and black and white. Which one do you think? But they're trying to reach two wedges of people rather than one kind of thing.
Yeah.
I want the people who like the black and white only but I also want the color people to like it.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to double my interest base by doing those kind of things. So I can see why they do it. But I have a feeling, and this might be completely wrong, but I have a feeling that when you edit photos, Bruce, the photo kind of leads you to the end result. It kind of guides you as to whether it should be a color, whether it should be a black and white, how much processing to be subtle or to be a little bit more over the top.
Funny you should mention that, because there's an image I took, 2007 in Big Sur in California.
Yeah.
And it's two wooden armchairs sitting in a creek.
Yeah.
And I process that
I image. Wouldn't have shot that.
When I first processed that, and that was way back 2007, 2008.
Yeah.
Still using Lightroom, knew nothing about color science. Processed it in color, was happy with it for, you know, the next 17 years.
Yeah.
Until about a month ago, and I happened to revisit that image and I went, I want to see what this would look like as a monochrome.
Yeah.
Absolutely freaking loved it. Then decided, let's make it a duotone. And I, you know, re-rendered it. And I have a folder on my computer just called wallpaper. And my operating system is told to just keep on refreshing the image every minute from whatever's inside that folder. And so I re-rendered that to my wallpaper folder. And every time it comes up, I go, yeah, I really like that as a monochrome image over the color version that I've been looking at for the last 16 years.
That's funny. But I've always had a couple of theories that a really good photo looks good, no matter how you process it.
Absolutely.
As long as you don't kill it. It looks fabulous as a black and white. It looks fabulous as a sepia. It looks fabulous as a colour. It looks fabulous, unsaturated, oversaturated. Yeah. And that's where I guess the decision as to how to edit can be really complex.
Sure.
When they look great regardless of what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's always, how do you know when to stop? Yeah, that's how I've always found maybe and I've said this to painters. I've asked painters the same question. How do you know when to stop? When that's enough of that tone on that thing? And their thing is either I don't and I overdo it, or I just know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a thought process. Maybe just a tiny. You know when it's done or you know when it's not done.
Yeah.
And when you change it to color or black and white or whatever it may be, generally, and as this is the case, if you really love an image and you haven't sampled it in different ways, you probably should.
Yeah.
Because we're all blinkered by the experience of shooting. So the colours, the tones, all that sort of stuff, our experience of what we shot, and it's not always obvious for us to know what those tones would look like done differently unless we experiment.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly get why people do multiple variations of a shot, but I think the choice always has to be up to you as to which one is the killer dilla. And they might all be great.
Something I've started doing just this year, since the release of Darktable 4.6, which was on Christmas Day, it was actually on the 22nd of December, is when I'm going back through my catalogue now, when I look at an image that I've processed in the past and I think to myself, I want to give this another crack. Prior to the release of Darktable 4.6, I would just reset the history on that image and I would process it again. And at the start of this year, I went, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. Darktable has this feature where it allows you to create a duplicate of the processed version of the image. And it's not actually duplicating the RAW file. It's only creating a new XMP file, which is tiny. Yeah. They're only a couple of kilobytes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the XMP file holds all of the information about the processing for that particular image. So I've taken this attitude this year that from now on, I'm not going to throw away my old processed versions.
Yeah.
And because Darktable allows
you... Just keep the XMP file.
It allows you to, within the interface of Darktable, it allows you to create a name beside each processed version. So I can have multiple versions and I can put, you know, maybe the Darktable version number that I processed that image in. And I can keep that so that over, you know, the coming years, I can watch my own process develop.
Evolve or devolve.
Exactly. And I'm kind of wishing I'd done that earlier, you know, like six years ago.
The things we learn. But it's fascinating. And this, it's not just about landscapes. This is obviously to do with all
of
photography.
Course.
Yeah. So, we all like different stuff, as I said. So, and it still comes back again to, as I keep always saying, If you're not getting joy out of it, okay, if you're processing a certain way because that's what everyone else is doing, but you don't like it, well, you wouldn't do it. Yeah, you've got to have joy. If it gives you joy to process a certain way, no one's right or wrong. You can't be. Even if it's Trey Ratcliffe, pixel vomit, if that's what he loves.
Yeah, exactly.
Good on him. Yeah, that's yep. all power to you, I guess. You know, it
and the
doesn't
thing
have
is,
to be for everybody.
As you said a moment ago, there will always be a sliver of humanity who loves your style.
Yeah.
Even if it is pixel vomit.
People like my photos. It's the same thing.
Right.
Crusty old man with almost the same photo every single time, you know, still has enough people interested. You know? But Trey was massively popular a decade ago. I'm not sure what he's doing these days, but
Stuck in customs. I will come to Trey's defense here. You know, he did scale it back. He started out with the HDR stuff, and that was real pixel vomit in the early days. And he learned a lot as he went along, as hopefully we all do. And his stuff is much nicer now. He went through a phase that I just couldn't stand at all.
Well, I find I'm editing, especially recently, like very recently, subtler and with more negative space. I'm actually building content-aware, more space around stuff.
Right.
I'm making my subject smaller and my space more of nothing.
Right.
Because that's maybe just how I'm feeling. Again, this goes back to that thing about people say, oh, I love that photo, Glenn. You've caught their soul. You've captured their soul. And I say, no, it's bullshit. What you're seeing there is a reflection of me.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's me coming back at me through that camera.
Yeah.
And maybe the way I'm editing right now, a bit more shrunken, a bit further, a bit more pulled back, is me as well now at the moment. At the moment, I'm a bit more pulled back from the world because over the last couple of years, and I'm a bit more insular, and it's coming out in my editing. It's a bit more step back and a bit more... not quite so in your face.
Do you think that will influence the way you shoot going forward? Do you think you'll shoot a bit wider?
Not necessarily, because the way I shoot, so the way I'm able to capture things like black backgrounds in scenes requires a very specific angle of view.
Yeah.
It's rare do you have the space behind the subject to allow... to create that in a larger scale.
Yeah.
So because of the way I see the world, with narrow viewpoints of angles of view, no, but I think it'll continue in my editing.
Yeah, right. Interesting.
Because that's something I can't, if I could do it in the real world, I probably would. Absolutely. I would probably shoot it with more space.
Yeah.
In fact, I was looking at some shots yesterday or the day before with some columns and stuff and there was lots of space. So where the environment allows it, I've often had that space as well. It's incorporated. Yeah. If I'm doing a shoot rather than a teaching thing, I'll shoot it four or five different ways. And one of those would always be space.
Yeah.
So if the environment allows it to happen, I'll probably definitely shoot it more that way as well. Or I'll just incorporate it as one of the shots that I do, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, if I'm only using a single door as my entire backdrop for a shot, there's limitations as to what you can do with the gear. Yeah. If I've only got a 200mm lens, not a 600mm lens or whatever, there's limitations as to how much I can compose inside that space. So...
yeah,
but I definitely think that again that personality comes out in editing. Some people who are a bit more shy and retired may have a much more subtle editing process.
Yeah,
some people who are a bit more literally in your face, maybe a bit more. Yeah, so it's a fascinating subject, and I don't think it's always about ignorance that we don't know how far to push an image. It's our humanness, our very essence of who we are that creates what we shoot, but also how we present it.
As we've said before, it's art, it's subjective, and it comes down to your own personal aesthetic, you know, as to what...
So it's fascinating. So to answer Paul's question, what do I think about it? I think do what makes you happy, again.
Yeah.
But, and I'll put the caveat to that, is if you have limitations in your editing ability, like I do, and you're butting up against that and you can't get your photos looking the way you desire because you don't have the editing ability, learn.
Yeah.
Yeah, elevate that skill. Don't go buy another lens.
Yeah.
Go and get download a free dark table and learn from Bruce.
Yeah.
Yeah. Learn how to be a better editor that can represent the thing that you want to in your vision. So this guy who with the haloing around the trees, that inability to understand how to process can only be a limitation in his photography to X point, and beyond that, it's an unwillingness to be better.
Exactly.
Or an ignorance to even realise that it's bad.
Yeah.
And this goes with any style of photography. If you have limitation, if you're constantly being, I don't like doing flash because I don't understand it, well, that's not an excuse.
No.
Well, it's an excuse. It's not a reason not to be a better photographer. No, you know, you've got to find, push those envelopes of the stuff. Because otherwise, what do? You keep doing the same stuff you always do.
Yeah.
The stuff that you know, the stuff that you know is going to work every time.
Yep.
And fine, as long as you're enjoying the experience of doing the shooting, but you might not ever be quite as happy with the photos as you would be because it's kind of same old, same old.
And the same can be said of the post-processing. You know, if you don't enjoy the process, which maybe you don't enjoy post-processing the way I do.
Oh, I don't, no. If it takes more than 3 minutes, it's not being done.
Yeah, so, you know, where I will happily spend a half hour working on an image.
Couldn't do that. Apparently, I learned the other day that the opacity brush has more than 100%. It does different volumes. So you don't have to go off 100% on everything. You can go like 80%, Bruce.
Ah,
you have variations in softness and all sorts of subtleties that you can do into stuff.
Wow,
you know?
Who knew?
Not apparently, lots of people. Yeah. And that's where, if we want to be better photographers, I guess we have to find where our struggles are and work on that, even if it's not pleasant. Yeah. Even if it's confronting. If you don't like taking a certain type of photo, maybe you need to ask yourself why. And it could be, I have no interest in taking a photograph of 19th century artwork. Oh, well, that's fair enough. I'm down with that. But I really wish I could do macro photography as an example, but I don't because I'm no good at it. Well, that should be a challenge, not a limitation.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And I think the problem is, it's a bit like fishing. If you want to go out fishing, people expect you to bring home fish. Show me the fish. Well, you didn't catch any fish, you can't be any good. Why'd you even bother going? Same thing. If you're a photographer going out to try and do some macro shots and they all suck, because that's hard, and you come home, where are your photos? Oh, I haven't got any good ones. Well, why'd you bother? No, well, I bothered because I was trying to get better.
Absolutely.
I was trying to improve my fishing skills. I was trying to whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know what? I caught the fish, but I put it back. Yeah, I took the world's best photo. I deleted it.
Yeah.
This is just a tribute to that photo, if you know the song.
Yes.
But that's the thing. It's that having to having to prove to someone else why we tried to do it should be something we completely try and get away from.
Yeah.
Go out and try and do that macro stuff to try it for yourself and be better at it yourself. And like with anything, if you want to be better and you want to fast track that, find someone who's better and hang out with them.
Yeah.
That's why people come to my workshops. I'll say without modesty, I'm a f-ing master of natural light.
Yes, you are.
Visualizing and understanding how lenses see the world, and I'm pretty darn good with flash.
Yeah.
My photos might all suck, and it doesn't matter. What matters is if I can teach that vision, that seeing, and those skills, and they become better at their own style of stuff. That's what's important. I don't want to shoot like me, so why should anyone else? I'm crap at macro. I like macro stuff. I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, I can't do it because half a breeze and the damn thing's out of focus.
Yeah.
But I really admire macro photos. But if I was to go out with someone who was an expert, I wouldn't be wanting to just shoot what they shoot.
No.
Or how they shoot it, because that would, just copying.
Yeah.
But learn, your focus stacked. Oh, okay, well, and how do I do that? And process that. All that kind of skills that would then say, okay, well, now how do I put that skill into my view of the world?
Yeah.
And I think that's the same with editing. It's the same with shooting. These are all challenges to be better.
Yeah.
And as you say with Trey, you may go to 11 on your dials of stuff when you're first learning, but then with refining techniques and just how you feel about stuff, you scale it back to 9.5 or something, you know? like I do. But yeah, fascinating stuff. Yeah, I think that's, and I guess if you look at all the astro photos with people shining their torch at the sky and all the photo competitions where all the photos kind of look the same, you know, that's people just trying to copy everyone else's art.
Yeah.
And getting the Me Too shot. And again, if you get joy out of that, great, but I'm sure there's some soullessness in doing that. Yeah. But if you can take those skills, because it's not easy to capture all those elements together in a yep. shot that looks good.
Yep.
But if you can start taking those and doing different stuff with it and producing different looking images. I mean, years ago, we had a guy on the podcast. What was he? American something. He was a light painter. He did all these like light fighter jets and stuff like that. Remember that? American Light and Magic. American Light and Magic. Something. He'd go and he'd do like 500 shots.
Yep.
And each one is just one little bit of light on a, yes. on a part of a plane or a part yep. of a car. Remarkable, taking a simple light painting technique and making something his own out of it.
Yep.
You know? Yeah. And fascinating because of that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I think we might have gone on 14 different tangents there.
But I think so. But it's all been all good.
All good stuff still, yeah. I think.
Yes.
Well, shall that's we it wrap for, it up? God, we've talked for a very long time.
We have.
You know, my poor trouble and strife was to see me. She hasn't seen me all day. So.
All right. Well, I guess we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks then.
Yes. Yes, hopefully, if we don't stuff up like we did last week.
Yeah, that's it.
No, all good. Thanks for listening, everybody. And fire in more questions like, Paul, what does Bruce think about that? Ask some editing questions. Ask us some stuff.
Yeah.
You know, for years we've asked people to ask us stuff and they never do, but I'll put it out there again because, you know, I really do find that a great conversation starter.
Totally.
Nothing else.
Totally.
You know? So.
Yeah.
All good. All right, people.
All right, mate. Look after yourself.
Will do. Take care, all.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to Shutters Inc. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.